Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Bob's right. This city's the pits.
Rude people.
Pollution.
Sin. Well, that's what makes the city so charming. Come on, Bob. Why don't you put a smile on your face and a song in your heart? Why don't you put a sock in your mouth?
All right, it's Dave Player in for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN. So Chicago's own Bob Newhart is a living legend. He has influenced more comedic performances throughout his stand-up, his albums, and his iconic television roles. This year, the Bob Newhart Show turns 45. It's the 35th anniversary of Newhart. And tomorrow is Bob's 88th birthday. And this morning, we welcome Bob back to the program. Hi, Bob.
Hi, David. How are you? Hi, Bob. Of course.
Of course, hi, Bob. So 1929, the stock market crashed. Herbert Hoover was president.
I had nothing to do with that. I get blamed for that all the time. I was a kid.
You were barely a kid.
It was in September. It was the year 29 was almost over.
I was going to say, a car was about $500. WGN Radio just turned 5 years old, and you were born in Oak Park. So congratulations, buddy.
Oh, thank you. Born in Oak Park, but lived in Chicago.
Yep, that's right. That's right.
I mean, I'm a Chicagoan through and through.
You absolutely are. And speaking of which, you know, you're a grad, of course, of St. Ignatius High School, Loyola University. And your first jobs in Chicago, and I love talking about your storied career, but you were in accounting and you were in advertising. So where did the comedy come into play, Bob?
The comedy came into play with in the accounting.
Okay.
I got a degree in accounting from Loyola, and I went in service from 52 to 54. And then I got out, and then I became an accountant. But I was so bored with accounting that just to break up the day, I had a friend of mine who worked for Leo Burnett. You know, their offices were
sure.
Their headquarters. Maybe they still are in Chicago.
Yeah, they are.
And just to break up the day, I'd call him on the phone like 4 o'clock, and we'd improv things just to kind of. It keep me from falling asleep at my desk with a green eye shade, you know.
That's awesome.
They kind of frown on that, you know.
Yeah, they do.
They don't like to see your head suddenly bang against the desk.
So that's what started it. I mean, just some inter-office phone calls interspersed with some fabulous comedy between you and your buddy.
Well, yeah, and it, like I'd call him up, and I wouldn't tell him what it was. I would just, he was a straight man, and I'd say, Mr. Smothers, I'm calling from the factory, from the East Factory, and we've had a fire here. I hate to bother you, you know, with this, but I'm here on the second floor, and we called the fire department, and they've been throwing water on the yeast factory. Mr. Smothers, I'm going to have to run up to the third floor. The water's starting to get out in the yeast, and it's rising. And then he would say something that I'd say. So it was just to break things up.
Yeah. That's awesome. And so it came out of that, and then all of a sudden you're signed up by Warner Brothers for your first album, which went number one on the Billboard Pop album chart.
You
topped
right,
you topped Elvis. You topped the Cass album of Sound of Music. It won a Grammy. It's been registered in the Library of Congress. First album. How cool is that?
That's right. Yeah, I learned about that recently. And actually, you know, GN plays a role in this.
Yeah, you've told me that before, that you made a lot of appearances on here back in the day.
Yeah, well, I did specifically.
Eddie Hubbard? Who was it?
It was Dan Sorkin was a disc jockey, and Power had a huge audience in Chicago, and so they came up with the Dan Sorkin show at like 10:30 in 10 o'clock or 10:30 in Chicago.
Yeah.
And Dan had me on it, and I'd be different characters. So I think we did 4 shows.
Wow.
And the director is still alive. The director was Dave Baumgarten, and he said, if you put your head outside your apartment at 10:30, you could hear an audible click as people all over Chicago turned off their
telephone. Oh, no. That's cool. Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, anyway, the local Emmys were in Chicago, but there was a strike, and so they couldn't televise it. So they asked me to do a routine I had done on the Dan Sorkin show, which was the Abe Lincoln routine. And wow. I'll never forget it. I did the routine. It was really well received. It was done in the foyer of Tribune Tower.
Wow.
Alex Dreyer came up after I finished the Abe Lincoln routine, and he said, "What do they mean? There's no talent here in Chicago." So that led to,
wow.
that led to a job with Tom Racine. He was the host, and I was a guest every day on a Man on the Street show, which was innovative in 1947,
sure.
But it wasn't that innovative in 1958. In fact, people would push you out of their way, you know, when you tried to interview them.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm late, pal. Okay, I'm late. You know, but I was on the show, and I got through like, I don't know, 10 o'clock in the morning. And took the Bluebird bus back to Chicago, you know, to almost into Oak Park.
Wow.
And I was playing golf at the Columbus Park, and I thought I'd died to heaven. I just thought, it doesn't get any better than this.
Yeah.
This is a get.
Well, you made it. And
that led to making the album.
Yeah, and then you came out the next year the same year with another album, and by that point, all of a sudden, you got a variety show, short-lived as it was, but won an Emmy and a Peabody and a Grammy in your first years in professional comedy.
That's right, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on. I really...
No, it came quickly. It came quickly.
It sure did, and you're not really prepared for it, you know? It was... they'd come to me and say, do you want to do 6 Ed Sullivan shows or 8 Ed Sullivan shows?
Wow.
And it would be like, 6, I guess, you know, and I didn't know what I was doing. I just, they said, oh, get on a plane and fly to so-and-so and say, okay.
Wow.
In fact, there was one date I was offered, it's funny, I'm going to play it next year in Lake Tahoe, Harris Club in Lake Tahoe.
Sure.
I was the opening act for Peggy Lee.
Wow.
So I did my 12 minutes and ran out front to watch Peggy Lee.
Is that how long it was? So for an opening act, it was about
15 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, that's all they wanted.
Wow.
And so the money was $2,000 a week.
Oh.
And I said to my manager, I said, do they beat you up between shows? I mean, why would you pay someone $2,000 a week?
For back then, that's phenomenal. Holy smokes.
So, exactly. So then I said to one of the people at Harris in Lake Tahoe, I said, am I supposed to lose some of this money? He said, no. We hate people that lose their money because then they put on terrible shows.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'll tell you what, stick around. There's more with Bob Newhart next on 720 WGN. Good morning once again. It's Dave Flyer in for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN, and we're talking to the legendary Bob Newhart. So, Bob, you were on the road a lot until you were offered the opportunity to stay at home and launch a new sitcom under Mary Tyler Moore Productions.
MTM was formed by Mary Tyler Moore Grant and my manager at that time, Arthur Price. So Arthur came to me. He said, are you tired of the road? I said, oh, yes, you know. I had a family, and
sure.
I just wanted to be home. And he said, "Oh, well, okay, I'll put you together with two writers, and they're writers on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and see if we can't come up with an idea for a sitcom."
You and Suzanne had amazing chemistry. You worked with Peter Bonners on Catch-22. You knew Bill Daly from working with him in Chicago.
That's right.
And which is cool. I mean, just the history with some of these actors. And then Bill Paley, I believe, recommended the late Marsha Wallace to join the cast.
Right,
as well.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
I mean, what a cast.
As a matter of fact, I called. We had a thing here recently at the at the TV Academy on the 45th anniversary of the Bob Newhart Show, and I called Billy. Bill Daly lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Yeah.
And I offered to fly him out, but Bill celebrates his 90th birthday.
Wow.
On the 30th of this month.
Wow, that's awesome! Yeah. Happy birthday to Bill! Look at that.
Yeah, yeah, great guy. We know each other from before the record album and all that stuff. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. And, and now 45 years after the premiere, the show is still regarded as one of the greatest television programs of the 20th century. And you were part of this lineup on Saturdays. You know, it's funny, the networks these days, they blow shows off on Saturday night. Like, that's where they kind of burn off reruns some of this other stuff. And this was the golden day of the week. It was All in the Family, Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart, Carol Burnett, I believe MASH at one point. I mean, you were part of this, like, massive, massive, massive success story.
It was Murderers Row, yeah. We got almost Super Bowl ratings. You know, we would get...
That's crazy.
42 share, 45 shares.
Wow.
They were unheard of. Well, there were only three... They were just the three networks.
Right, right, right.
You didn't have cable at that point.
Right, right. And then here's six incredible years, 142 episodes, and you were ready to go out after the fifth season, and then they pushed for all of a sudden a seventh, and you were ready to go. But at some point they gave you, and you've told me the story before, and I want you to share it. They tried to create a premise where you and Emily were going to have a baby.
That's right. That's right. Well, that was one of my concerns.
Yeah.
When we were first talking about doing a sitcom, I said I didn't want to be, I wouldn't play the stupid daddy. You know,
right, right.
Always gets in trouble, and then the wife and the kids get together and say, you know, we love daddy, but he's an adult, and how do we get him out of this latest fix he's gotten himself into, and that somehow they do, and then they all gather around and they all give me a kiss on the forehead, and yeah, you know, we know he's adult, but we still love him.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That's not the kind of show I want to do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In the sixth year, I got a script, and Emily was pregnant, and I called Mike Zinberg, and I said, I read the script. He said, what'd you think of it? I said, oh, it's very funny. Very funny script. He said, we didn't know if you'd like it. I said, I loved it. I said, who are you going to get to play Bob?
That's my favorite. I love that. Don't mess with Bob. That's all I'm going to learn from that experience. That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay, so Bob, for us Chicagoans, and this has been talked about, and you just talked about it on Conan O'Brien's Late Night Show. Bob Hartley's commute in the opening of the show was called out in the press. Even back then, your commute began in what is now the Charles Schwab Building on 430 North Michigan Avenue, which is right across from the station.
Is that what it is now? Yeah, it used to be a financial.
Yeah. Yeah, still is.
A loan or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you walked across multiple downtown bridges in the opposite direction before heading to Evanston, then got off the L, and then walked about 7 miles back to Edgewater, which appears to be like a two-hour commute, which should have taken about 20 minutes. So nobody, if you were, and you've said this before, you know, if you weren't from Chicago, of course you wouldn't know whatsoever where you were heading and what you're doing. But the skyline was beautiful. I mean, every turn was gorgeous. Right,
but you know, would you trust this man? The man who misses his stop every day of his life for 6 years?
No, I would not. I would not. But it's funny how people now, even now, are looking at it and breaking it down who are seeing it maybe even for the first time. Like, you know, our millennials are watching the beginning of the show and they're going, wait a minute, what?
I know. It was a Ravenswood L that we took up to. And it, as you know, the L gets on the ground up around Evanston or Wilmette in that area.
Right.
You know, it's, that's when it's on the ground. And then in the beginning of the Bob Newhart show, they show it, I get off, I'm on the ground. So.
Well, it certainly was the wildest walk in television history. All right, stick around. More with the legendary Bob Newhart after a look at your morning traffic.
All right, Bob. What is it?
Well, I was an innkeeper in this crazy little town in Vermont.
I'm happy for you. Good night.
Nothing made sense in this place. I mean, the maid was an heiress. Her husband talked in alliteration. The handyman kept missing the point of things. And then there were these three woodsmen, but only one of them talked.
That settles it. No more Japanese food before you go to bed.
Day player on 720 WGN. We're talking to the legendary Bob Newhart. So this year, Bob also marks the 35th anniversary of Newhart. And that was on, of course, 4 years after the Bob Newhart show this October. And at the time, what was going through your mind about launching another sitcom after having such a successful comedy back in the 1970s? What put you back on television?
Well, I always knew I was coming back on television. I loved it. I just loved the medium.
Yeah.
You know, you do movies and they're nice, but live television is the closest you ever get to stand up, which is where I started, you know.
Yeah.
And so I knew I was coming back to television. It was just a matter of finding the right people and the right idea I remember Barry Kemp he and I got together on the concept of Newhart, and he wrote a script that took place in Vermont,
mm-hmm.
I had the script on my desk, and I kind of circled it for 2 days like it was a cobra or something. You know? And then I said, no, I got to read it, you know.
Yeah.
And I read it, and I loved it, and I just called Barry and said, yeah, let's go.
That's awesome. Always.
And that was 8 years, yeah.
Yeah, always a top-rated show. And, of course, I mean, I'd be remiss not to talk about this, but TV Guide named it the most unexpected series finale and one of the most top-rated series finales in TV history. It was nothing short of brilliant, and I believe it was your wife's idea long before the show ended, right?
It was all her idea,
yeah. And it was all about, hey, here's, you know, it was just kind of like bedtime conversation. I got an idea. When you end the show, let's have Suzanne come back and let's do the whole Bob Newhart thing. I mean, it was brilliant.
Yeah, because there were so many inexplicable things about Newhart. The maid was an heiress, and
yeah.
her boyfriend talked in alliteration. Peter Scolari.
Yeah,
and then you had Larry Darrell and Darrell.
Yeah,
these guys who were obviously from West Virginia. What the hell they were doing in Vermont? No one could ever figure out.
And the great Tom Poston, of course, as well. You know,
and Tommy was such a. Miss him terribly. I miss all of them. You know,
yeah.
I miss Susie and
sure,
and Marcia and we lost and Mary Fran. And,
yeah, and Don this year. And I know we haven't talked since Don passed. But you know, I'll tell you, I had the pleasure of going out to Vegas for his 90th, and I interviewed him backstage and saw Barbara and Tony, his manager, and. You know, when I mentioned your name in the interview, he said, he said, hey, thanks for mentioning Bob's name. Otherwise, I'll get a call.
I'll tell you a story. I don't think I told this story on Conan, but Judy and I and Barbara were sitting in a booth at the Sahara in Vegas years ago. And there's a guy in the very front row, and he's got this terrible hairpiece. It's the worst hairpiece. It looked like a dead animal of some kind. Someone had shot a raccoon and just stuck it on his head. And Don kept passing him, and I'm going, oh, my God, he must see him.
He's right there.
The guy with the hairpiece, you know. And Don goes by him another time. He walks by him the third time. He goes, no one would ever guess, sir.
He was waiting. He was building.
Now the guy's got to sit there through all of Don's show of an hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, man.
Everybody's staring at his hairpiece.
Poor guy. Hey, if you're going to go to a Rickles show, you got to expect that, right? I mean, that's for decades.
I went to law school. That's assumption of risk. I remember
that's right.
That. That's one. That's one law, I remember.
That's right. And, I mean, you two shared, and I don't know how many people really know this, but a special longtime friendship. I mean, you traveled together. I mean, you were best friends. And, you know, I can't imagine how tough it is not having Don around, you know?
Yeah, I'm not even sure I'm dealing with it yet. I really am not. You know, it's just I still expect the phone to ring and pick it up, and it's Don, But as more and more time goes on, you know it's not going to happen. But we had a great time, and there'll never be another one like them.
No.
So we saw the original. That's one way of looking at it.
Absolutely. Well, when you see Barbara, say hello, and say hello to your lovely wife, Ginny, as well.
I sure will do.
Well, the Bob Newhart Show complete series box set and the Newhart box set, all available on DVD. Bob's original albums are streaming on Amazon and iTunes, and you can follow Bob on Facebook and his touring schedule at BobNewhart.com. Always a pleasure.
It isn't much of a touring schedule anymore.
Okay.
I kind of cut way back. I cut back to about 10 dates a year. That's all.
Finally,
57, 58 years of
flying
across the country. It's just, you know, at some point you've got to say, oh, okay, that's enough.
But, you know, I love that you still come back here and still come to the Chicago Theater. I mean, you know, every time you come, I come see you. It's always a fabulous show, man.
You know, that date at the Chicago Theater, it is, well, as a kid, it's funny because I thought about this, about Martin and Lewis. I was going to St. Ignatius, and I take the streetcar to downtown, and I go to the Chicago Theater, and there's Dean and Jerry.
Wow.
And they were, it must have been like 1945, 1946,
yeah.
Something like that.
All right, yeah.
So they were so huge that people would stay over. So they said, any of you want photos, see us outside on the fire escape. And they would stand on fire escape, and they'd just throw these photos, these signed photos. And
wow.
It's the only way they could get people out of the theater.
Yeah.
And then beyond my wildest dreams, I would get to know Jerry, and I'd get to know Dean.
Wow,
and Dean
right.
Show, I think I did 24 times. So
wow,
they were huge.
Did you ever share that story with them when you talked to them about standing outside the Chicago Theater?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever did.
Yeah.
Wow,
how cool is that?
And then everybody said, "Well, oh, poor Dean. What's Dean going to do?"
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I know, right? Think about that.
He became a giant.
Yeah, both of them separately, which isn't very, you know, that's rare. I mean, when a team like that splits up, usually
they
both fail.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's something.
Yeah.
Well, man, enjoy your 88th birthday tomorrow, and here's to many more, my friend.
Thank you, David.
All right, we'll talk soon. Thanks again. All right, it's 720 WGN.